Harper Audio presents Life is Elsewhere by Milan Kundera, translated from the French by Aaron Asher, performed by Richmond Hoxie. Part 1. The Poet is Born. 1. When the poet's mother wondered where the poet had been conceived, there were only three possibilities to consider. A park bench one night, the apartment of a friend of the poet's father one afternoon, a romantic spot outside Prague late one morning. When the poet's father asked himself the same question, he concluded that the poet had been conceived in his friend's apartment, for on that day everything had gone wrong. The poet's mother had refused to go to the friend's place. They had quarreled about it twice and reconciled twice, and while they were making love, the door lock of the adjoining apartment rasped. The poet's mother took fright, they broke off, and then they resumed lovemaking and finished in a state of mutual tension to which his father attributed the poet's conception. The poet's mother, on the other hand, never admitted that the poet had been conceived in a borrowed apartment. She was repelled by the bachelor's untidiness, by rumpled sheets and pajamas on a stranger's bed. And she also rejected the possibility that he had been conceived on a park bench, where she had let herself be persuaded to make love, reluctantly and without pleasure, thinking with disgust of the prostitutes who made love this way on such benches. So she became absolutely convinced that the poet had been conceived on a sunny summer morning in the shelter of a huge boulder that stood with sublime pathos among the other boulders in a small valley where the people of Prague liked to stroll on Sundays. For several reasons, this setting is an appropriate place for the poet's conception. In the late morning sun, it is a setting of light rather than darkness, day rather than night. It is in the middle of open nature, thus a place from which to take wing. And finally, though not very far from the apartment buildings on the city's outskirts, it is a romantic landscape, strewn with boulders looming out of wildly rough terrain. For the poet's mother, all this seemed to express what she was experiencing at the time. Wasn't her great love for the poet's father a romantic rebellion against the dullness and regularity of her parents' life? Wasn't there a hidden likeness between the untamed landscape and the boldness she, the daughter of a rich merchant, showed in choosing a penniless engineer who had just finished his studies? And so the poet's mother was living a great love, despite the disappointment that followed a few weeks after the beautiful morning at the foot of the boulder. When she disclosed to her lover, with joyous excitement, that the intimate indisposition that monthly disturbed her life was several days overdue, the engineer asserted with appalling indifference, but it seems to me a feigned and ill-at-ease indifference, that it was an insignificant disruption of her cycle, which would soon resume its benign rhythm. The poet's mother, perceiving that her lover refused to share her joyous hopes, was hurt, and she stopped talking to him until the day the doctor confirmed her pregnancy. The poet's father said that he knew a gynecologist who would discreetly relieve her of her worries, and she burst into tears. The poignant end of rebellions. First she rebelled against her parents for the sake of the young engineer, and then she ran to her parents for help against him. Her parents didn't let her down. They spoke plainly to the engineer, who clearly understood that there was no way out, agreed to an ostentatious wedding, and readily accepted a sizable dowry that would enable him to establish his own construction business. Then he packed his belongings into a couple of suitcases and moved into the villa his new wife had lived in with her parents from the day she was born. The engineer's prompt capitulation, however, couldn't hide from the poet's mother that the adventure she had precipitated herself into with a heedlessness she found sublime was not the great shared love she believed she had a full right to. Her father was the owner of two flourishing shops in Prague, and the daughter's morality was that of balanced accounts. Since she had invested everything in love, she had been ready to betray her own parents and their peaceful home, she wanted her partner to invest an equal amount of feeling in their joint account. Striving to redress the injustice, she wanted to withdraw from the joint account the affection she had deposited there. And after the wedding, she presented a haughty and severe face to her husband.